Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Here in person and in Zoom land, welcome, everyone. So this morning, I would like to begin with this meta prayer that's adapted by Anam Tubten, who is a contemporary Tibetan teacher. And I'm offering this as a prayer for the new year. May all beings be safe from inner and outer harm. May all beings be free of guilt, shame, and hatred. May all beings enjoy physical and mental well-being. May all beings live with the ease of an open heart. May all beings go beyond inner darkness and awaken to their radiant true nature and boundless love. So for me this week, this is my third speaking engagement. Last Sunday I was leading an intention and vow workshop for the new year here last Sunday afternoon, and then Thursday evening, I spoke at a Minnesota Zen Center 12-step group where I spoke about the first step being that it's the first month, and here I am today. So this is bringing different things together from this week for me today. But this week has actually been kind of an interesting week in our society. And many different things have come up. That some famous entertainers have died, Betty White and Sidney Poitier. And here in Minnesota, we've gone below zero and above zero and cloudy days and sunny days, and so a little bit of a roller coaster. We have our constant of COVID and Omicron news. And something that really caught my attention, that the verdict for the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial was handed down this week. And I happened to catch it, and I was very touched by what the judge had to say. And I wanted, in comments before he handed down the sentence, and I wanted to share a little bit of what he said. Arbery's murder should force us to consider our expanding our definition of a neighbor and how we treat them. I argue that maybe a neighbor is more than people who just own property around your house. I believe that, and I also believe that in assuming the worst in others, we show our worst character. Assuming the best in others is always the best course of action. And maybe those are the grand lessons of this case. I just was profoundly moved by those words from this judge. This wise old white guy. Things people are looking inward and society has been looking inward. And I'm so glad he was so eloquent. When we study ourselves, it's important to understand what our intentions are and recognize our own biases and let them go. To become free of harmful thoughts and actions. To consciously consider them and find a different way of being. So last Thursday evening, as I mentioned, I spoke at MDMC's 12-step group and considered the first step, which is we admitted, and I adapted it for more general. We admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. And this is commentary that I found online. The principle behind the step one is honesty. And when we take a closer look at the step, it just makes sense. The first step asks us to take an honest look at our lives and tell the truth. For many practicing addicts, this may be the first time in forever that they have actually done so. I think this really aligns with our practice. And when we come to our practice and have a way-seeking mind, perhaps it is the first time we really delve deep and look at ourselves and see the truth of our lives and how we've been. So I think the first step is very aligned with what our Zen and Buddhist practice is. Hokan, who's a student of mine, lent me this book that's a transcription of some talks Katagiri Roshi gave on the precepts for people getting ready for Jukai in 1982. And he relayed this story. So, one young Japanese guy asked the Zen master when he was at the platform of a Japanese railroad station, what is the essence of Buddhism? And the Zen master said to him, to learn who you are. Now, how can I learn who I am? I know pretty well who I am, but he said, he being the Zen master, to learn Buddhism is to learn the self. How can I learn more? He said, to help people. To help people is a very good example. That's why one of the practices of the six paramitas is, first, we say offering or giving. That's the Dana paramita. Giving is to help, to offer yourself to somebody. That is a pretty hard practice because we are always seeing our life and others' lives from an egoistic sense. Even in good things, when you try to help somebody, that help is sometimes not good. Even though the motivation for helping people is good, it is not good as a result. People don't accept your help. From this point, you can learn who you are and also you can learn how to help people, how we should help people. You can learn pretty well. It's painful sometimes, but this is a good way to learn who we are. When we help and support others, we need to get ourselves out of the way. when we approach a situation with the idea of knowing what's best, we can get into big trouble. A number of years ago, I did the first unit of chaplaincy training at a hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And one of the first things we learned in that training is when we enter a hospital room to let go of our ideas of how we're going to help the patient and how we're going to help the person who we're visiting with. And one of the first things we learned is to go in without our ideas and to say, how may I help you? And to listen carefully and deeply to what that person has to say and not assume that we have all the answers. And I think that's what Katagiri Roshi, relaying the story, was talking about. So when we do that, we must try our best to fulfill the request and let go of all the shoulds. And even doing our best to try to help and fulfill the request, we might miss the mark. We don't know, but we have to try with an open heart. As I mentioned, this week Sidney Poitier died. And, you know, when famous people die, they kind of give you a retrospective of their lives. And so they were talking, there was talk about Sidney Poitier and all the movies he was in. And when I saw all these movies, very early on, his movies, the roles he played, were all about upright, outstanding African-American men. And when he was playing those parts, particularly in the 50s and 60s, they were kind of controversial because the perception of African-American men at that time was not people in professional roles and not people doing extraordinary things. And there he was, being just a human being and just a man with no extra labels. And he stood up for himself in those roles, or the characters stood up for themselves and held their heads high, you know. And then there's these other perceptions. There's the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and in that movie he is dating or with a white woman, and he's going to see. They're going to her parents for dinner. And it was Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy were her parents. And it was a beautiful movie. And so Sidney Poitier chose his roles carefully to show the best he can of African-American men. And he had quite a contribution, and he was the first person to win an Oscar, first black man to, and I think black person to win an Oscar. And he just nailed it, and his whole life was like that. And so it was a joy to hear the descriptions of his life this week, and now I feel like I'm going to need to binge watch six of the movies. I've seen many of them. There's others I haven't seen. Or Betty White. who died a couple weeks ago, and she was almost 100, a week away from being 100. So, and in her whole life, she exuded joy and kindness and open-heartedness. Yes. I guess she's a good role model for me. I like that. And to the end, she had a good heart. And she hosted Saturday Night Live when she was 95 or something. You know, it's just great. And I think she showed the best and strove for the best. They both did. And so in this week, where we also were looking at the anniversary of what happened on January 6th last year, it's good to see that there's positive as well as difficulties and negative that can always be coming up for us. So in this book, I was reading the first chapter in Tadagiri Roshan's precepts book, and he always chose his words very carefully, that he would spend a lot of time with the English language dictionary before he gave a talk. And a word that was in this first chapter that he used was imperturbable. I just like, oh man, that's a wonderful word. And being imperturbable in our lives, in our practice, is just right. That when we can be standing upright in the midst of difficulties and whatever is arising in our lives with imperturbability and not be knocked over, or if we are knocked over, finding our way back to balance in a quick way, in a prompt way. And I just find that word very, very inspiring. So as I mentioned, that last Sunday I led a intention and vow workshop here. And the guided meditation I offered during Zazen was something I shared last Sunday too. And I'm a big Tara Brach fan, and this book, Radical Acceptance, is just amazing. And she finds ways to just say yes in the midst of our imperturbability or in the midst of difficulty. The description for the workshop was, what is your deepest longing and meaning of your life? If you followed your heart's desire, what would it look like in the coming year? So at the end of our workshop, we had a closing circle, and I'm saying this in a general way so I don't feel like I'm breaking confidentiality here. We were looking at what our deepest wishes are, and one participant began, when she was reflecting on the afternoon, that they wanted to travel the world and make connections with people all over the world. As they continued to talk, they realized it wasn't necessary to go all over, that they were experiencing the connection right here, in Google Land, actually, because she was in Google Land. So, right here with us at Clouds and Water in Google land. And I thought that from where she began to where she saw that everything's already in our own backyard, like Dorothy, that it was pretty good. Although I must say, she was joining us from the East Coast, so but that is fine. And so people saw with their deepest longing and their heart's desires that it wasn't so much about what we want to do and what we want to happen in the coming year, but more about how we want to be, how I want to be. Having the right mindset was really most essential. And for me, it came to me when I was reading this. My longing and heart's desire is to be imperturbable. I've been part of a study group, and the book we were reading that we just finished is called No Self, No Problem. And it's about Anand Tupton, who wrote the beginning metta prayer that I read. And I wanted to share something he said. Because I think another longing we have is to be free and to wake up. And he's using nirvana in this paragraph. Through embracing and living the truth, we realize inner freedom, which is the only nirvana to be found. Liberation is the cessation of all mistaken beliefs. Mistaken beliefs become obsessions. Obsessions are ego's shameless effort and struggle to once again sustain its flimsy existence. Nirvana is not some kind of beautiful celestial garden filled with peaches and mangoes, a place where everybody is walking around with beautiful halos. It is not a place where everyone is in a constant state of bliss. It's not a place where the moment we arrive, there are 1,000 people waiting to welcome us, waving banners and playing trumpets. That's not really the definition of nirvana or enlightenment. It's not a place, a destination we are going to travel to. It's not even a transcendent state of mind that we are going to achieve. It is not a beautiful, ecstatic, trance-like state of mind that we can cherish. That's not really nirvana. Rather, nirvana is a great cessation of the separation between us and the truth. It is the mere acknowledgement of what has been the case all along. It's like waking up from a nightmare. It's a great relief to discover that nothing has to be done. So that's really all I have to say, but I hope that we can all find freedom and joy in our everyday lives this coming year and for our whole lives. So if people have comments and would like to share what their true longing is, please. Hi, Ty.
Hi. Hey, thank you.
I can tell there's a lot of words.
just want to play, just want to play. You really like the idea of racism to like, I wonder if we're addicted to racism. I mean, like there's like some kind of, there's some kind of connection there. Can you hear me still? Anyway, that's, I just wanted you to say more about that.
I think in the broadest sense, that's really true. That we're addicted to what we're indoctrinated. We need to look in the mirror and look at the truth of that. And face it and know that in some ways, you know, it's interesting that the first steps says that we're powerless with our addiction. And yet, there's a way to be careful and to be honest with ourselves, and there is a way to be powerful in saying enough, and I want to walk down a different path. And the first step really is recognition that there is a problem. To take it from there. And this is a big question, and I would like others besides myself to make comments if you would. It's thing to look at, Ty, thank you.
I just wanted to say it's hard. Being honest, and I just appreciate the comparison. So I just think that's a really great place to start. So thank you for that. I'm sorry, y'all. The sound, you turn the sound off. Now we can't hear you. We can't hear what's going on.
Oh.
So I don't know if you want to talk a little more about that, but because you brought it in, you know, this idea of self within you. And that when the judge was saying, well, what's a neighbor? You know, it's kind of also pointing to that, like, who do we make into the other? And who do we say is kind of okay, like a neighbor?
yes. And, you know, when I was watching the judge and what was going on there, I felt such deep, deep sadness for the defendants and how far astray from my point of view and many people's point of view, their actions were. And I'm sure that they lived that way their whole lives. White people who have grown up in the Deep South. And that I'm making a wide view of that, and I know it's not every white person in the Deep South, but there's particular ways we're all raised, and how to view other people, and rather than letting go of assumptions, and looking at people in their best way, and what their the best possibilities are, and letting go of our own selves and our own opinions. Ourselves are our big obstacles. And I also want to say, please forgive me if I'm speaking clumsily. I'm trying.
Johan, I thought it was very interesting in the story that you shared from Katagiri, that where the monk was asking the master about, you know, how should I practice, and, you know, studying yourself or get to know yourself, and he said, how should I get to know myself? And then the answer was giving to others.
Yes.
So that also, I think, maybe you could say more about that. I think that kind of speaks to this idea of the self not being separate.
Yes, yes. And I want to correct one thing. It wasn't a monk. It was just this guy on a railroad platform,
okay,
you know, who happened to see the Zen master waiting for the train next to him. So, and when we're not just taking care of our own egoistic self and our own needs and looking at what the needs of other people are and finding ways to serve, I think that's really important. In Buddhism, we could say that's the Bodhisattva vow, is to help others on this path alongside ourselves. And it's interesting when we help others and we're doing things for everyone, that somehow that feeds our own best selves to be able to help somebody else. And I think it's really important in this, when we're being offered help, to accept it and allow people to help us. Because I think, particularly here in the West, or I don't know if it's a whole human thing, is that we don't like to accept help. We want to do everything ourselves and do it. And when we cut off help from other people, we're cutting off that connection. And what's most important, you know, that we're not islands unto ourselves, and when we can create the connection and help each other, that's the best.
As you're talking about Folder, you told the story about the student who said master of Folder.
Can you speak louder?
When you told the story about the Zen master on the platform, giving the teaching that helping others is a way to know the self. And then you talked about Sidney Poitier carefully choosing his roles, and he always did play an upstanding African American male, and was criticized for that. But he should be showing breadth or depth. And I think that was a huge gift to us. There was always somebody who was never going to choose to be that character, the gangster or the drunk or whatever. He only played upstanding people, and they were always gripped by racism. I mean, all of the thoughts in the heat of the night is a great one. But I guess, so this is a very inspiring talk to me. In answer to Kai's reaction, I believe I've come to understand how completely American society is based on a system that reportedly went away in 1865, but didn't, was reinstituted in the 1920s. So it was just rampant overt, but I think what is really insidious covert racism that we're not aware of. So this is also restricted knowing yourself. I mean, really being honest about yourself and how you react to things. So thank you.
Anyone like to share what their deepest longing is for this coming year?
To keep my heart open and soft and stay connected, feeling love even when it's challenging.
Thank you.
I was just wondering if we could do a land acknowledgement, maybe, since we have time, or if you would be willing to do that. If not, that's okay. I guess I was, like, missing that today.
Oh, I'm sorry. I substituted it with the matter.
Oh,
but
that's fine.
I can... So this place that we're inhabiting now, and clouds and water, was once the homeland of the Dakota people, and later on was the neighborhood of many African American people who were displaced by highways, displaced by people in the dominant culture who wanted this place for themselves. And both the indigenous and African American people have had deep suffering because of these actions. And here we find ourselves, the Clouds and Water Sangha, here in this place. And we need to vow to be good stewards of this place and always remember that we're caretakers and not owners of this place.
Thank you.
What was the word that Katagiri used?
Imperturbable.
Yeah, I want to be imperturbable.
Thank you. I think a lot of times when we meditate on our deepest hopes, we realize we already have what we think we want. And that's what I came to in my meditation. Things like love, security, abundance. It's a matter of shifting our perspective and seeing, oh, I have those things in this way, rather than in the way that I think I want it. I already have it in this way.
Yes. And it's rooted in our everyday lives.
Yeah, I don't really want to share what my deepest longing is, but I just want to say I was very touched by that meditation, and I could really feel it in my heart, and it brought tears to my eyes. It was really beautiful. So just asking the question was really helpful for me, kind of like you were saying, for several minutes, just coming back to the question and just feeling it in my body, kind of. So thank you for that. I really appreciated it.
You're welcome, and thank you, Tara Brock. I was thinking maybe these will be the parting words. Be Dorothy. It's in our own backyard. What we need.